Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CARGURUS.com. Cargurus.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. I'm here with my man, Adam Kinzinger, former congressman from Texas, head of One Country. Everybody say hi to Adam Kinzinger.
Now, Tim, I live in Texas now, but I'm a congressman from Illinois.
Oh, that's true.
You said I was a congressman from Texas.
I know.
I would have already beat Ted Cruz by now if that was the case.
Good. I've already given away my last topic of this podcast. But we need to start with somebody that you know a little bit. I don't know if anybody's seen the news here. If you guys have just been hanging out, it's Texas. But Liz Cheney said that she's voting for Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
She said something interesting in her endorsement. I don't believe that we have the luxury of writing in candidates' names, particularly in swing states. Why don't you talk about that a little bit? Because some of our friends disagree with that.
Yeah,
they love to write in. Ronnie Reagan's ghost.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So, first off, obviously not a big surprise she did, but I'm glad she did. And I think the timing is great. Obviously, it would have been great had she been at the convention, but
Come on, just be honest. You're thrilled that she wasn't there.
It's so great.
You got the prime slot. Great timing, Liz. Perfect timing.
Nice. Nice. No, but I think in terms of the writing in, she's right. Now, here's what I will say to people that just say, I can't vote for Kamala. Maybe it's the abortion issue or something. It's like, okay, if you literally can't get there, there's no problem in my mind if you can't get there of skipping the ballot line or writing somebody in. At least don't vote for Donald Trump. Because part of that, I fear that some of these folks are going to be like, well, I have to pick one. This issue is so important to me, so I guess I'll vote for Trump. We don't want that, obviously.
That's true.
But if you can stomach things you disagree with, which, by the way, I'm married. My wife and I have things we disagree with, right? A lot, actually. But
let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Top three disagreements.
Yeah. What is it? Money? It's nuts. But, like, you've got to take a especially if you're a leader, if you're somebody that people are looking up to as a thought leader, an opinion leader, and you took the stand somebody like Liz Cheney did, you've got to take a pick. Look, it's going to be Donald Trump or it's going to be Kamala Harris. And he is a real credible existential threat to our country. She isn't. So it's a pretty easy decision in my mind.
It is. There was one other part of her remarks that was not part of that viral video that Bill Kristol put in the newsletter this morning I liked. She writes, I understand the desire to think that you're casting a vote for conservative policies. But first of all, you're not. He's not a conservative.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's critical that she is out there making that case.
So this is like one of my biggest pet peeves is this idea that Donald Trump is conservative. Now, I will say he inherited most of the conservative movement, but he himself isn't. I mean, be clear. He's a nationalist. I don't even know what he is. I don't even think he knows what he is. He's all about Donald Trump. Conservatism is about conserving things. It's about kind of drawing back when you feel things have gone too far. He has basically the opposite of that when it comes to constitutional
Accelerate.
Issues,
yeah.
when it comes to spending, when it comes to our military policy to say, you know, we're going to kind of conserve America's role in the world. No, you're abdicating that role in the world. And so there is nothing conservative about Donald Trump. And by the way, Tim, I use the example of, like, if you're in a trench, okay, and you're fighting, like they're obviously fighting hard in Ukraine. Another big, one of the most existential issues facing our world today is whether or not Ukraine can win. But if you have an enemy that's 5 meters away from you, or one that's 50 meters away from you, and you and I are defending ourselves in this trench, we are paying no attention to that 50-meter enemy. And let's call that political differences, right? If we didn't have this person right here, then we could focus all we wanted on those kinds of things. This is the threat to us. And that threat is, does my kid, does Christian Kinzinger get the privilege of being raised in a democracy as strong or stronger than I? Because right now, he's not on that track to get that.
Could you work on that analogy in, like, kind of RuPaul's Drag Race version for the next time we're together? I know the trench analogy. I'm like, I think I get where you're going.
Football
with that.
Football and war. That's what
yeah,
I got.
I've never
that's
been in the trench. Speaking of Trump not being conservative, I don't know. Did you catch any of his event at the New York Economic Forum today?
A smidge.
It was
yeah,
really something. I'm going to do a reading for you.
Great.
He
Good.
Was asked.
Thank you.
The question was asked of him how we should address the problem that people are struggling to afford childcare. Are there any specific policies that he had put forth to help people who are struggling with childcare? Here was his answer. I'm not going to do a voice. I don't do voices. When you talk about the kind of numbers that I talk about, that because childcare is childcare, it's something you have to have in this country. You have to have it. When you talk about those numbers compared to the kind of numbers that I'm talking about, by taxing foreign nations at levels they are not used to, but they'll get used to very quickly, and it's going to stop them from doing business with us. But they'll have a very substantial tax when they send product into our country. Those numbers are so much bigger than any numbers that we are talking about, including child care, that it's going to take care of.
I fully agree with what he said there. I mean, look, this is like, if you'd have read that and said, hey, Kamala Harris said this, this would be the front page of every newspaper. And I know on the podcast we talk a lot about the double standard, but this is an example that this guy is not just a threat to democracy, he's a threat to actually competent governance because he has no idea what he's talking about. He doesn't know the issues and doesn't care. Honestly, doesn't care. You think he cares about the cost of child care? I would put all of my money on the fact that he doesn't think an ounce about that at any point in any day.
That's true. I wanted to focus on the incoherent part of the answer. When I was reading the transcript, it goes on.
The part that was incoherent?
It goes on for much longer, okay. As is his wont. Very long, not clear sentences. But in the end, as a professional Trump translator, I'll let you know what he is trying to do.
All right.
His message to the New York Economic Forum, and the image, I have to tell you guys, it's like Trump up there, and he's darkened his skin even past burnt sienna now. It's like a pine tar. It's like a pine tar skin Trump. Ugh. And like six like PhD academics sitting there asking about this stuff. And it's just like...
He looks like a literal clown.
This scene is so absurd. Anyway, but what he was trying to say... If I could sane wash him, that he wanted to tariff. He's going to tariff and tax foreign countries so harshly that we'll get so much money from the tariffs that will pay for the free childcare. That will solve the childcare cost problem for America. So, as a conservative that has strong views on fiscal conservative and economy, what do you think? What do you think, like, kind of the Wall Street Journal ed board view is of we're going to tariff people so hard that we're going to get free child care for everybody? Does that sound like a kind of Reagan Thatcherite
I'm going to go on a limb and say it doesn't sound that way.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we don't have to bore everybody because we all know economics in here, and you know that if a product
I've got a couple of my buddies here from college.
Okay, well, most of us know it. you know, if you send, obviously, if you tax something coming in, and I think there's times where tariffs can work, especially against unfair trade practices, but that's the purpose of them, to kind of level the playing field. But obviously, that is just passed on to a consumer. Here's an interesting thing, if I can take a quick aside, please, and not bore you. When we were doing the tax reform bill back in 18 or 17, whenever that was, Paul Ryan wanted to do something, which I think was actually good, called a border adjustment tax. And to make it really quick, it's basically, in Europe, let's say they make a beer, they put a VAT tax on it, except when they export it, they strip the VAT tax and send it here, and so it competes unfairly. And what this part of the bill would have done was to basically re-add that adjustment so that it competes fairly, and it actually was like $1 trillion of income over 10 years.
It's good for like Shiner Buck.
Yeah, it would be great for bullshit. Shiner. Shiner's great. As a new Texan, you did good there. But,
got it.
Thank you. Yes. Yay, Shiner. And so... by the Southern Republicans, the very people that are hardcore with Trump now, that all of a sudden forget they tanked a very, I think, beneficial at that time border adjustment bill because for whatever reason, and they've thrown that out. What drives me crazy is like we all have to, when you're in elected office, you have to adjust sometimes how you vote or what you're going to, you know, there's politics that come into play. But what you can't violate is core principles. Unless you have a real come to Jesus moment on something, your core principles are important. These guys, everything about the core principles doesn't exist with them anymore.
Here's the thing that I struggle with, though. Look, I get it going along with Trump if you're like a nativist immigration restrictionist, and your number one issue is you want to build the wall and you don't want any brown people in this country. That's rational that you're with Trump. If you're a cultural conservative, it's rational. It's wrong, but rational. Like, what about your buddies like from Congress like that fiscal conservatism was their thing, though?
Yeah.
The Ryans, the Gallaghers. They look at this, and it's like he's at the economic forum. It's like my main policy is I'm bringing back Smoot Hawley. Like, how... like. And he's a moron. And he wants to kill the Constitution. And he's an isolationist. Like, why are they rationalizing him in the CNBC crowd? Like, can you explain that to me at all?
So I can speak from former colleagues' perspective. You have to rationalize your support of him or you are not able to look in the mirror. I mean, really, it's like, you know, you think about it, and I'm not making this comparison specifically, but it's always asked, how is it that a well-advanced society like Germany ended up producing Nazis and killing 6 million of their citizens? Well, it didn't happen overnight. What happens is there's a little bit of your soul that you sell out each time you know, Kevin McCarthy says to do this, or Donald Trump makes a tweet saying that, legitimate Americans should be sent back to their country of origin. And you make a little bit of a compromise every time. And eventually, you get to a point where you have to psychologically convince yourself that what you believe is right. And by the way, humans, we can convince ourselves if we're dedicated enough to do it of anything.
Yeah.
And so they have
convinced... Otherwise you have to admit that you fucked up.
Yeah, it is, because you have to now look in the mirror and own the badness that exists. You have to own your part in that. And look, sunken cost fallacy. Why didn't we leave after we lost 10,000 men in Vietnam? Because we already lost 10,000 men. We can't leave now. Why turn against Donald Trump? Because I've already sold so much of my soul that what good would it do to turn against him now? And identity, by the way, we all struggle with this in our lives. What you do for a living is a big part of how we see ourselves. It shouldn't be, but that's human nature. When you're a congressman, short of the White House, any room you walk into, you are the most powerful person there, probably, and you're the one that gets everybody's attention. That can be addictive, by the way, and they can't let that go.
Well, I don't think you're going to be invited to Paul Ryan's Christmas party this year after that answer. All right. Speaking of conservatism and, you know, sort of history and the way that people have changed their views, I'm curious, Winston Churchill, hero or villain?
Oh, my gosh. I was listening to your podcast today from yesterday, or maybe that was today's podcast. I mean, look, and actually...
I'm asking the same question over and over again?
It's
a penetrating question. I want to hear what all my guests think about this.
And by the way...
It's tough. People are re-looking at this all the time now. They're reconsidering it.
And by the way, you inspired me. I downloaded the book Bloodlands, and I started listening to it on the drive here because of that podcast. And look, obviously, Winston Churchill's a massive hero. I mean, think about this. This is a guy... and I can relate just a smidge. I'm not comparing myself to Churchill, okay? Let's be clear.
Okay.
But
I'm the only one drinking up here.
Winston Churchill stood alone for a long time on the threat of Adolf Hitler. He was called a warmonger. I got called a warmonger when I called for bombing ISIS before they were named ISIS. We saw a resurgent Al-Qaeda. He gets called this, and he sticks with his truth that he knows, which is Adolf Hitler is obviously the threat he ended up becoming. And then he leads his country that is getting devastated in this war, getting bombed every night, devastated. He leads them to victory against all odds. Some would call it providence that they won. And then he gets voted out of office. Like, because the English were like, yep, thank you, but now we need somebody that's not so good at war.
We're not going back.
Massive, massive hero. And for anybody, and by the way, I'm not even surprised. This is the sad part. I'm not surprised that there's a increasingly public effort now to try to say that Adolf Hitler wasn't that bad. It doesn't surprise me to see that on the right.
It has surprised you a little bit, though, that it's for people that missed the inside joke there that haven't listened to my podcast already today. Shame on you.
But Tucker, let's play it. Let's listen together.
Yeah, Tucker Carlson platformed this revisionist historian man who says that it was Churchill's fault that Hitler killed all the Jews, essentially, because he was so bellicose. And the thing is, like, it's one thing to be like, okay, there's some weirdos having this podcast over here that are doing this, and it's free speech, it's free country, everybody can have their wrong opinions. But like, Tucker Carlson was one of the key reasons that J.D. Vance is the VP pick.
Yeah,
like, it was Tucker Carlson and Trump's kids and Elon and Peter Thiel that basically are calling Trump and being like, do not pick one of these boring neocons. You have to pick somebody like J.D. Vance, who's more based, and has a different foreign policy view, or else that they'll coup you or whatever. Tucker Carlson literally called Trump and was like, the deep state will kill you if you pick Marco Rubio, because they like Marco Rubio. They had that. That was a real conversation they had. So it's Tucker that gets the VP picked. The VP has a history of platforming the same neo-Nazi, J.D. Vance, and Trump, like, obviously shares these views to some extent. Like, that is the insane part, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, oh, it's like some TPUSA college guys or like whatever, feeling their oats and, going full Hitler. It's like, no, the revisionist Nazi ideology is literally sitting inside the house.
Yeah, and look at, like, misinformation. I mean, January 6th wouldn't have happened without people like Tucker Carlson.
Right.
And without what happens on that kind of severely online right, which is, I had always mentioned I predicted violence. I predicted it on January 1st to Kevin McCarthy, and he dismissed that prediction. But I knew it because...
He has a long record of success predictions, though.
But I didn't predict it because I'm, like, clairvoyant. I predicted it because I looked online, right? And I saw what was there. So this has a real impact. Mike Lee, has anybody here ever heard of NAFO? N-A-F-O. It's like a few of you. So...
All right.
It's kind of this online joke, but it's a real... There's a bunch of us that are part of this group, NAFO, and we push back against Russian disinformation. Some crazy guy tweeted something about how I lead NAFO, which I don't.
Not really. Not just... I have to interrupt. Not just some crazy guy. Kim.com.
Yeah, Kim.com.
Who was, like, essential to the original, like, Russia leaks.
Yep, yep.
Like, he was the one that was part... Like, the hackers, the Russians that hacked Hillary, like, sent that shit through Kim.com.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Anyway,
and so he had tweeted that I basically led the CIA op, of NAFO. And I, of course, ridiculed that. But in the process, Mike Lee, who used to be, I never agreed with a lot of him, but used to be like a thoughtful constitutional scholar, basically tweeted that saying how the CIA shouldn't be paying people for misinformation online. The point is, the idea that I lead a CIA op online called NAFO, it's a bunch
very
of dogs,
cool.
is insane. If I did, that'd be kind of cool. What'd you say?
Cool. I said it's very cool. But
it would,
you
be,
said
it
it's
would be cool, actually, yeah.
Got it. Okay.
I would love to take credit. I couldn't tell you if I did, but But you see how quickly, within 3 hours, a U.S. senator is tweeting that. And so people sit there and see that and go, well.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, this takes us to our next topic, because we have a indictment from the Department of Justice out yesterday about a Russian disinformation campaign. It was people that were associated with RT, Russia Today, who used money to pay, allegedly, this intermediary influencer woman, Lauren Chen, to go recruit MAGA influencers to push Russia disinformation. They had a huge money. They paid a ton of money to big name MAGA people. Well, big name if you're in that world. You guys, I hope you haven't heard of them, but Tim Pool and Benny Johnson and Laura Southern. And like, it is working. Right? Like,
it works.
It is the money that is coming from Russia is real, and it is influencing the way that a lot of people on the right thinking. Like, that's like a big conspiracy to say that on the right, but like, it's true.
It's true. And by the way, it is. I mean, agnostically, I'll say Russia is brilliant in how they're doing it. They spend $10 million, according to this indictment. Yeah. $10 million, which is the cost of like 10 ATACMS missiles in Ukraine, to be able to destabilize our system here. That is the cheapest, most effective weapon they can use. What I thought was interesting, and I think I'm right in saying this, is I expected Tim Pool and some of those to push back and say this is a deep state conspiracy, it's not real. They kind of have more pushed back against the fact that they, you know, were knowingly Russian agents.
No, they say they're the victims.
Yeah,
I had a couple of them tweeting me today, I'm the victim. I'm like, that's the best. It's the best crime of all time. I wish I was victimized like that. These guys were taking in $7 million.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, seven figures rather.
Yeah.
So I was like, victimize me, baby.
Yeah.
I'm ready, Vlad.
That's later tonight at the Glitter Bar, isn't it? No, but he said it. It's like, I'm just saying
I bless him. He can make gay jokes. You can't make gay jokes. He can make gay jokes.
But like,
we got way back.
But like, look, the expenditure, I mean, it's obvious what's happening. And the great question, I think it was David from today that actually had said, well, let's see what they do tomorrow. Now that they know that they are Russian agents, they can pretend they were unwitting. Now that they know, what are they going to do? And the answer is they're going to continue to say the stuff they've been saying.
But taking a full circle on Mike Lee. So Mike Lee, the senator for Utah that you were mentioning earlier that accused you of being a CIA plant, has an official senator Twitter account, Senator Mike Lee. But then he has another account called Based Mike Lee.
Yeah, so cool.
That is him. And that he pretended like was not him for a long time. And then he was outed by a friend of the pod, Brian Schott, as like the person that, it's like, no, literally the actual senator is tweeting from Based Mike Lee's account. But if you go back into the archive, he goes, the person that convinced me to start Based Mike Lee was Benny Johnson.
Crazy.
Benny Johnson was one of the people that was taking money from the Russians.
Yep.
So like, it might have been unwitting, right? But it was unwittingly successful that it got all the way up to the fact that a sitting U.S. senator was implicated in this and is pushing out anti-Ukraine, pro-Russia propaganda. Like, it, at minimum, tangentially as a result of Russian money. Like, that is insane how deep they got it.
And the interesting thing is, like, first off, you know, like, after the election, right, and, you know, Trump started saying the election was stolen. It's not like everybody on the GOP all of a sudden believed the election was stolen. What actually sealed the deal was not just Donald Trump saying it, but then everybody that's in Congress or the Senate or a talking head also saying the election was stolen, because you need two people to confirm a fact. And so in people's minds, that confirms a fact. And so, yeah, I mean, like, you know, when you're putting out this kind of misinformation and you're a constituent of Mike Lee and you see him tweeting whatever he's tweeting of the day, you're going to believe it because, I mean, he's a U.S. senator. The disadvantage America has, and this is one I could spend an hour talking about, and I won't, but the disadvantage America has in the information war is Russia, obviously, at the behest of, you know, Putin, can do this kind of stuff. When we try to fight back, which we can do some kind of information stuff, but if Rand Paul finds out that we have a disinformation campaign in Russia, for instance, he will run to Twitter and expose that and say, this is what the U.S. is doing there, blah, blah, blah. So we are hamstrung in how we can respond, and we're basically sitting here taking shots but not able to fire back.
So you're saying we should be doing more secret propaganda shit?
Oh, I totally think we should, yes.
Are you sure we're not doing secret propaganda shit that you don't know about?
I'm fairly sure. there's some, but not like this level.
You got any sources? You want to share? Uh-oh. People are getting nervous out there. I want to talk about Arlington for a second. In the crowd tonight, if for those of you that read the Bulwark's website, our friend Will Selber occasionally writes for our site, Afghanistan veteran. He's here tonight. Hey, Will. Everybody say hi to Will. Will wrote beautifully about Section 60 and why it's important to post 9/11 vets. Trump today at that New York Economic Club speech that I was referencing also for some reason was talking about his trip to Arlington. You know, he kind of sort of loses the thread sometimes, starts heading down. It's not exactly an economic club topic. But he said that he was there because the Gold Star families were celebrating the soldiers there. Like, what the fuck is wrong with this person?
I mean, look, it's very, very simple. When you're I don't even know if narcissist is him. Like, if there's anything worse than narcissist, like the devil,
megalomaniac,
like, when you're that deep of a narcissist.
Saying it's the devil in disguise.
Yeah, maybe. No, but when you're that deep of a narcissist, you are incapable. You're literally incapable, physically, fundamentally, mentally incapable of understanding sacrifice. And so look, if you take away, you know, the sacrifice of that, you can see then how he would say suckers and losers. They didn't get anything out of that, right? And it's fine if you want to be a Hollywood star and be a narcissist, but when you're president of the United States and you go there and the idea of giving a thumbs up and smiling, look, there is no world. And I'm not, like, for everybody in here would feel this way. There is no world in which you would walk through Arlington Cemetery, Section 60, which is the very recent, you know, the ones that have died in the War on Terror. My friend Michael Wood is here, by the way, who ran for Congress. Fantastic guy.
Shout out, Michael Wood.
He's a Marine, and he probably has friends buried there. But the idea that you could walk through that and even think to smile and give the thumbs up, or to say to, you know, your press guy, like, make sure you get a good shot of this.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If you go on an official visit as like a sitting congressman or whatever, that's great. What you don't do is go there to politicize it, because obviously we know why that's wrong. But let's think of the precedent it sets, where now every candidate for Congress, every candidate for Senate, every candidate for city council will go to Arlington as a prop to get their picture taken to prove they're more, you know, with the troops and pro-American. It's disgusting.
Gross. All right. Putting Arlington aside, though.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
please clap, as they say.
That's your guy.
I don't know if you ever heard that phrase before, please clap. So it's kind of a way that you encourage people to clap. So
do you know, by the way, we got to be good friends on the Jeb campaign.
And somebody, one man had the balls to say, you know what? I'm for Jeb Bush, because he's going to be a good president. And that was Adam Kinzinger. So we got to hang out a lot together on the road. It's me, Adam, and Lindsey Graham. It was a weird trio. We've kind of gone our separate ways, but one of us has. Just one more thing on the Arlington thing, though. You and JBL said that you would never think to do a thumbs up and a smile in front of a grave. Is there not any grave that you would ever do a thumbs up? I'm sorry, don't answer that. Don't answer that.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I had a serious topic to get to, but we're laughing, so we're going to do fun stuff first. You were hanging out at the DNC.
Yeah.
Did you make any pals?
Thank you.
Are you
there?
Like, are you popular there? I mean, you and Cory Booker throwing back shots, or like, do you have any like kind of backstage anecdotes with
us? Yeah. Look, it was a really cool experience because, you know, when I wrote my speech, it was, you know, obviously my goal was not necessarily speaking to the people there. It was speaking to the camera, to the Republicans that feel like we feel. And there's more of them out there than it seems, even if they end up voting for Trump, some of them. But the one thing I didn't want to do was shy away from being a Republican, because that was the point. And so Sophia and I, my wife, you know, we were talking some, and she's like, just expect when you, in the opening, when you're kind of like, hey, I'm a Republican, you might get booed. And I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I expect it. You know, it's a convention. It's everybody's. But when I got there and I felt the energy in that place and I saw how my other Republican friends were welcomed on stage, I'm like, oh, there's not going to be booing. Like, they did boo J.D. Vance, which was nice in my speech. And
did anybody throw any panties at you?
Not that I saw, but, you know, not on stage.
On stage.
Not on stage.
You watch out, ladies. That was not a request, Springfield ladies.
But it was an amazing, amazing feeling. And, you know, I thought the RNC did a decent job of their convention. The DNC blew their convention out of the water. And the thing that I loved about it, you know, look, yes, I was treated very well. You kind of feel like a rock star there because everybody's coming up, and it was great, and I loved that. What I loved about the convention is the Republicans and Donald Trump specifically have vacated a lot of real estate in the middle of America. They've vacated national defense, you know, those kinds of easy, and the Democrats went in and grabbed it. Right? Yeah. USA chants, patriotism. Like, this is all stuff, and I said this at the beginning of my speech, the Democrats are just as patriotic as we are. They're just as concerned about the future of this country as we are. And I meant that.
There were no tri-cornered hat guys in the hallway, though.
Oh, it was amazing.
Pocket constitutions.
No pocket constitutions. There were no wackos, and that was nice. That was nice.
Right. So nobody, you didn't shots with any Democrats.
No, because we were kind of in and out. But I will say really quickly, in 2015, the Main Street group, Republican Main Street, which is like the moderate Republicans. It's not moderate anymore, but it'd be moderate in comparison. We were having a getaway in Florida, and we were being protested by like 20 people in 1776 garb calling us rhinos. And I'm like, what kind of weirdos travel to Florida to protest in Revolutionary War clothing? Yeah.
That's going to be the National Security Council if Trump wins.
Those
20 guys are doing Project 2025.
Yep. Sir, we need more muskets in this place.
All right. We got to stop up. We got to do serious. We got to do 1 second about the Georgia shooting. I like talking to you about this for a reason, because you, unlike me, you were scared to hold a weapon. You're a gun person and care about it and care about the Second Amendment. And we have this shooting yesterday. And since it's happened, you know, more has come out. And it's like this young man that committed this horrible murder is 14. His mother had drug problems. His father had guns in the house. The FBI got warned about him. The FBI showed up to the house. They talked to the father a year ago. And the father was like, oh, don't worry about this. He won't get guns. He had lots of calls for help, according to other people in the family. And it's like, fucking Republicans, like our whole life growing up, we're like, we got to stop the deadbeat dads and like the welfare moms. Like, there was a lot of like coded racial shit there, and there was a lot of bullshit there. But like underneath it, like the responsibility culture was there, right? And you don't hear that from these guys now. That's like this father who had guns in the house, who had a troubled kid, who was warned by the fucking FBI, did nothing. Like, that man should face legal problems.
Yeah.
Jeopardy.
Yeah. I agree. Yep.
So, anyway, am I, and David Frum's on the podcast today talking about Canadian gun laws. So are we statists? That's my question for you. You're a gun man. How do we balance this? How do we balance freedom with like having some fucking responsibility?
I am much more moderate on guns than I started when I was in Congress, you know, just because of what I've seen. I mean, you know, yes, there were school shootings in 2010, but not like we're seeing now. I mean, look, And I got a kid now, and I hate to say that that makes a difference in policy, but it does, because you feel things differently as well. But like, yeah, I am a gun guy, and I fully believe that you should have a right as a law-abiding citizen to conceal carry, for instance. I don't, if you're certified, and I do think you should have to have a license for that. I don't understand open carry, really. I don't understand why. But okay, Texas, you guys like to show your guns off sometimes. It's cool. But I usually conceal carry where I go because of security threats. What I don't understand is why, one of the things I was trying to push in Congress, I was the first congressman, Republican or Democrat, to call for banning bump stocks, right? Mm-hmm. That was a 90% issue. And to show you how crazy it is, Donald Trump banned them. The NRA gave Donald Trump an A for his score. I got a D+ because of that, right? And I hate the NRA, right. Just so you guys know. And so let's find the areas that I think we should all be able to agree on. Red flag laws should happen. Because people say, well, you're denying somebody's constitutional right before a trial. That's true. We also do that with restraining orders, by the way. There is stuff in the law where sometimes to protect people, you have to temporarily deny a constitutional right. The other thing, at least when it comes to assault rifles, for instance, I think we should have to have another layer of licensing to get those further background checks. But can't we all agree that you should have to be 21? You have to be, in this country, you have to be 21 to buy a handgun. I don't know the rules in Texas. Maybe it's 18. You only have to be 18 to buy a long gun, which includes an AR, by the way. And by the way, just so you guys know, and you guys know guns, if it was a pistol against an AR, you'd lose 99 out of 100 times because of how high powered they are. The pistol, 99 out of 100 times. And so, look, there are common sense things we can do. You have to be 21 to buy cigarettes. Nobody went crazy when we raised the cigarette age. Let's raise the gun age at least, right? Yeah. Because a lot of these shootings in this case, and I know I kind of went off topic, but in this case, a parent should be held accountable. Yes. But in most of these school shootings, it's somebody that's either in school or just recently out of school, that if you ban the purchase of those guns, that would be out of that group's hands that are most likely to commit a school shooting.
So I'm not a communist. We can go after the dad.
I agree with, and look, and David today actually really pulled at my heartstrings with the talk about, look, Canada, every other country in the world, you have mad kids. You have violent video games. You have violent movies.
And you have guns in Canada.
You don't have this.
Yeah. You have guns in Canada.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. That was tough with him. Listen to him talk about it. So you're in Texas. You worried now that you can't run my secret plan for you to run as a Democrat's ruined now that you just came out for gun reform?
Nope.
No. Okay. What do we think? Does everybody think Adam should run as a Democrat in Texas? He's got some bad votes. He's got, do you want me to start going through his votes? He's got some votes that are going to get you booing. Do we want to do a boo? Okay, no, we're not. We'll do that another time. You've got some votes, though. But I don't know. What is your message to the Texas Democrats? I do think it's like,
no, look,
you got Colin up this year. And what can they, I'm going to see Colin on Saturday in Austin. Obviously, we like him better than Ted Cruz. We like Ted Cruz, right?
Boo. No.
What's your advice to Colin and to other Texas Democrats?
So I'm
Democrats?
Friends with Colin. I think he's great. And I've been friends with him since we served in Congress together. Look, this is what Texas Democrats, and I think Democrats in general do right, is they're giving him the leverage to be able to be who he is. He's kind of a moderate Democrat, right? If you want to win Texas, this was always my advice to people in Illinois, is like, you can't have the most conservative candidate run statewide in Illinois and win. You need a moderate. Like, every one of our, statewide office holders in Illinois that were Republicans were pro-choice, for instance. And it's like, you've got to give flexibility for that. The Democrats do a good job of that. The Democrats do a good job of putting down their crazy element and actually lifting up the candidates that reflect the state. Texas is not a far left state. If you want a Democrat to win, somebody like Colin Allred is the one to do it. By the way, recently polls showed him only about 2% down. It's going to be tough, but it's doable.
Why don't, so just being devil's advocate, there's the other side of that Beto just drew such enthusiasm in the state, right? And there's just kind of Beto mania. I think my husband even had a Beto shirt, and we lived in Oakland, you know? So Beto was everywhere. I don't think there are any Colin Allred shirts walking around Oakland. I don't live there anymore, but I think I can say that pretty safely. How do you kind of balance that, right? Because, like, you do need both the excitement of younger voters, new voters, versus, you know, having somebody that's more, you know, in the center.
Well, the first thing is, if you're running against Ted Cruz, they're going to be pretty excited, so that's good. But, like, I mean, it's really just a matter of, do you want to win or do you want to lose? And yes, somebody that's hardcore, either to the left or to the right, gins up their base. The Republicans in North Carolina are really excited about Robinson, okay? He's like down by 15 points.
This wasn't on my agenda, but let's do a quick aside. I'm sorry, I was just getting the red light, but why not? What do you think about going to a porn store 5 nights a week with a pizza? He brings the pizza into the porn store, goes into the back room, and he's there every night.
Sounds like a Republican candidate for governor if I've ever heard one. I mean, it's just the hypocrisy of this all.
What was he watching back there, do you think?
I don't know.
You ever been in a back room at a porn store?
Nope.
Never one time?
I can proudly say
Are you sure? Even before the internet? Even
very
before Pornhub?
Yep.
We can't watch Pornhub in Texas right now. Is that true? Can we still not watch Pornhub?
Anyway.
This is enough to bring my libertarian side out. I'm not a big Pornhub man myself. I got a lot of vices. Okay, none of your business. But if people want to go on Pornhub, they should be able to. But
okay.
5 nights a week away from your family does feel like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, well,
at a
the
video
thing,
store.
This is the guy that, like, has stood at church pulpits and talked about, like, you know, basically the church should take over the state. I mean, just, it's insanity. And the problem is, this is what... In this case, it's probably good because he's going to lose. It's what Republicans put up. And so to get to your original question, which was much better than where we went, you know, look,
Hi, Sophia.
I think it's just a matter of as Democrats recognizing, if you want to win statewide, and if you have a very liberal district like in Dallas, you put whoever you want in there. Statewide, you got to put a moderate Democrat up there. They don't have to become conservative. They don't have to try to pretend to be Republicans. But obviously, you want, as a party, to have a candidate that reflects, you know, enough number of people in the state that you can actually win an election. Because you can have so much excitement and raise so much money, and if you lose, that achieves nothing.
All right. I agree with that. We're going to close with this. You received 7,500 retweets for something that you sent the other day, which had me very jealous.
What is it?
I would like to do a dramatic reading, unless you want to read
your
own tweet.
No, please.
I can't wait to flush Trump down America's toilet. For my kid to learn in history class how America rose up to fight back against him, for his name to be alongside Benedict Arnold and Judas, and for everyone who supports him to pretend they never did, and for the grifters to go bankrupt, like everything Trump touches, we deserve better, we'll rise up and achieve that, we rock.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe it. Yeah.
I think he can win a Democratic primary. We're not going to talk about his votes, but I think that he could. I think that the people like that. Adam Kinzinger, do you have anything you want to add to that? Any final words
for
the crowd here?
No, look, I'll say this. First off, it's awesome being here. Thank you, guys. You guys are great. And the Bulwark community, I mean, I travel a lot and talk to a lot of people. I mean, honestly, more than anything I've heard you on the Bulwark, or I listened to you on the Bulwark. So to all the leadership of the Bulwark, it's awesome. Thank you for being great fans. And look, I really, truly believe, I would not be doing this if I didn't. I believe that, you know, we're going to defeat Trump, but even if we don't, and God forbid, but regardless, Trumpism will be gone, and there will be people that will be ashamed. They'll be scrubbing their Twitter timeline because they don't want anybody to remember that they ever supported that SOB in this country ever again.
That's my friend Adam Kinzinger. We are going to be back with a couple other people you know.
Thanks, guys.
Take me to Texas 200 years ago, where a pride rose from the ashes of San Jacinto. It still beats in every heart like a battle cry. Where I was born, where I was raised, so when I die, take me to Texas on the open range, The Rio Grande is in my veins. It's heaven there. And so my prayer is that you'll take me anywhere in Texas, the only home I know. I'm a child of the Alamo and the yellow rose. So when I go, take me to Texas, where my daddy worked, where his blood and sweat and tears are still in that red dirt. While Palominos run, cowboys are kings. And if I stray too far, I'll let my Lone Star dreams take me to Texas on the open range. The Rio Grande is in my veins. It's heaven there. And so my prayer is that you'll take me anywhere in Texas, the only home I know. I'm a child of the Alamo and the yellow rose. So when I go, take me to Texas. Take me to Texas.